Oh, we got the thumbs up.
We got the thumbs up already.
Okay, so let's cut down the banter. Let's get right into it.
We were definitely not saying anything we couldn't say
on this podcast.
Absolutely not. No jokes at anybody's expense.
We only tell jokes at people's benefit.
Right. Yeah. So do you have anything to say that isn't racial? Never mind. Anyway, let's
get some sexist comments.
Catherine actually listened to the last episode, so maybe we should
just tone it down.
Move on to Rand Paul, lab leak, Fauci. These are some good topics.
Yeah, good keywords.
That's what this is about for you YouTube algorithms out there trying to track whether you should broadcast this far and wide to a supportive audience. No, there was a CIA whistleblower subpoenaed who testified this week at one of Rand Paul's Rand Paul committee hearing on pretty damning stuff. I was just, you know, discussing with Lindsay, and she's like, well, what Rand Paul says is just his opinion. I'm like, okay, but now there's another person.
Yeah.
Person who works in the CIA who says that they initially reached a decision basically to say it was more likely COVID origins to be a lab leak.
Yeah.
And then that decision got rewritten in the night.
Yeah.
Unclear why. And people who asked questions about it were punished.
Yeah.
And then ultimately the CIA did come back after doing the we don't know thing for a while. They did fall in line and say it was more likely to be lab leak. That's the opinion they hold today. And the CIA is kind of like, well, so we said it's a lab leak. Why are you even so mad at us, Rand Paul? And Rand is very reasonably like, because it's unclear why you changed your mind and why you reached this conclusion initially and then didn't do that. And this guy said it was that Fauci's tremendous sway was part of it.
Yes. So the whistleblowers, a CIA officer named James Erdman III, of course, if you're a CIA officer, you got to have that like Good Shepherd pedigree, right?
Yes. What a great movie.
Oh, man. So good.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah, put that on
good
the list.
Shepherd. Yeah. I love that movie.
So, I mean, I think actually like the most immediate, this guy, CIA officer, and then he was tapped to lead the Office of the National or Director of National Intelligence or ODNI, right? Mm-hmm. Tulsi Gabbard, their investigation into COVID origins for the past year. And I think honestly, like the most damning stuff that came out of that hearing was that while he was conducting this investigation, he was saying the CIA was illegally monitoring their, phone calls and computer activity and their contacts with whistleblowers within the agency. He said that one of the witnesses who talked to his investigation was fired. You know, I was a CIA contractor who was fired the next day. And then also that the agency has just been slow walking, turning over documents requested to them that are that Congress has mandated that they release. Yeah, back in 2023,
yes.
Congress unanimously passed.
Yes, and Biden signed it.
Yes, yeah. So
every elected official agreed that the information that led the various government agencies to conclude lab leak, more likely than not, not with full confidence, with partial confidence. That information that our elected representatives voted on them to see and us to see.
Yes.
And the deep state has simply said, meh.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's outrageous.
This law is passed unanimously. Biden signs it in 2023. And they release a 9-page report with redactions.
Right.
Summarizing stuff that had already come out.
That we already knew.
So they are basically just completely blowing off this congressional mandate.
Yes.
And that continues to this day. The guy said, the whistleblower, Erdman, he said in the hearing that now, finally, Gabbard, they have some 2,000 documents that they're, in the process of declassifying and releasing. But like, this has been a years long effort and it shouldn't have been, right?
And the importance is they could have very specific information that would lead us, that would be useful. For instance, the Wall Street Journal has reported the existence of this.
Mm-hmm.
Evidence that that people who worked at the lab were sick with COVID before the wet market outbreak.
Yeah.
That would be a smoking gun.
Yeah.
That would be definitive.
Mm-hmm.
If they have something like that, this debate is settled.
Yeah.
And I would want to know. If they don't have something like that, well, then maybe it's much less clear. I would want to know that too. I want to know either way.
Yeah.
But it's just like, what led them to make this determination?
Yeah.
Maybe they have some information about, more specifically, what the scientists were doing there.
Yeah.
or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But the six scientists, and that's what the Wall Street Journal said.
Yeah, real sick scientists.
Real sick scientists. Well, they have a sickness of the soul. But yeah. If it manifested in COVID before the wet market,
that would be pretty...
then we got it. Because this was why I still, you know, well, I don't know for sure. We don't know for sure. The wet market being the initial outbreak is the major point of evidence that goes the other way.
No, and I don't find that very compelling evidence.
I disagree.
Before a natural origin, because of course, like if you have a lab leak in the city, right. Of course, a major source of initial infections is going to be a crowded market, right? If it's starting to circulate, right?
But it wasn't a movie theater, it wasn't a school, it wasn't a gym, it wasn't a concert practice. It was, I mean, the kinds of place, it wasn't a all-you-can-eat buffet, restaurant, all these other things that were super spreader events.
Mm-hmm.
No, it happened to be one that has animals at it. That's the thing that bothers me. At a thing that has animals. A thing that, if it's the other explanation, would be the place it would start.
No,
it's a coincidence either way, because the Institute of Virology, where they're doing research that scientists have warned could produce this exact thing, is just down the road.
Yeah.
And so if you're a natural origin person, then your hitch should be that, okay, but it happened at this wet market. This is the only wet market that is literally on a global scale next door to a place where they do the exact experiments that scientists have been warning could cause this thing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a cosmic joke situation that... It's like I'm trying to analogize it to, like, I've tried to come up with this before. Like, let's say you find someone dead in a beekeeping place where there's tons of bees.
Yeah.
And it's not clear what killed them, but it seems like it was probably they had an allergic reaction to being stung.
Yeah.
And that's happened before. These are very dangerous bees. It's happened before.
Yeah.
But in every other case where it's happened, you find the bee sting marks on the person. And there's no bee sting marks on this person. And this person worked at a factory where they're making this strange chemical that kills you without leaving much.
Yeah,
and people have been warning that there could be some contamination going on.
Yeah.
But still, the person's dead at the beekeeping place.
Yeah.
That's the situation.
Okay, sure. I still don't find the wet market being a source of initial infections like all that great evidence for natural origin, because if that's the case, like, these animals had to be imported from somewhere, and if COVID is as transmissible as it is, you would expect other sources of outbreak, you know, leading to the wet market, right? And you would also expect to find the animals that were infected, right?
Well, that's the they didn't find the bee stings part
of it. Right.
Yes, they have not found the animals. And in fact, when they've done passive and said, oh yeah, see, here's where the infected, that was all bullshit entirely.
Right.
And they should have found him. They really tried. They should have found it. Didn't find it. So,
I mean, it's complicated by the fact that China wants, regardless of the explanation, they want no information to come out about this. Because there's nothing good that can come from finding the truth for the CCP.
Right.
Because either it came from China regardless,
right?
And they want to deny that. They want to say, oh, it's frozen seafood shipped from somewhere else, which is ridiculous.
Right.
It actually came from the CDC lab. It's our lab leak, right?
Right.
All of that is ridiculous. And then...
They probably think, they say the Uyghurs did it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah.
Taiwan did it.
Yeah.
That's why we have to conquer them.
Right, yeah. There's people argue this stuff to death, but I would just like the two points I would make in favor of lab leak would be the overwhelming circumstantial evidence of you're engineering these exact types of viruses to be more deadly in the lab at the city where it broke out. And then secondly, the virus was so transmissible from the jump, right?
Sure.
Normally, when you have a virus leap from animals to humans, kind of like with the hantavirus now, it's very bad at spreading between humans, even though it kills people. Like, it has very high lethality, but is bad at transmission. That's normally what you expect from a virus leaping. And we didn't have that at all. It was very low lethality, very high transmission.
Yeah.
And also the features of the virus were the scientists submitted research plans saying, hey, here's how we're going to make this virus and then all that.
Yes.
And again, I'm not a virologist, so a lot of that goes over my head. But it seems...
I mean, it's a fascinating debate, and I want to know.
Yeah.
And,
well, and, it's
our intelligence officials have made determinations based on information that they've been ordered to turn over to us, and they just won't.
Yes. And I think it's not just morbid curiosity for, like, finding the origin point of COVID. A, there's a question of accountability, because if this was created by people and with U.S. tax dollars, like, we should know that, and people should be held accountable. And then secondly, there's a active debate right now about what to do with this kind of gain-of-function research where you manipulate viruses to make them more deadly.
Right.
The Trump administration has a EO calling for a policy to restrict this
stuff.
Yeah,
they
called
for a policy within 120 days. It's been a year.
Yes.
Alina Chan, who I love, she's a Harvard scientist.
Oh, she's great.
She was calling this out, being like, guys?
Yeah, it was supposed to be out in September.
Yeah.
And we're still waiting on it. That was one of the claims Erdman made in his testimony, is that it's difficult to I don't know how much I buy this, honestly, but he's like, it's difficult to implement this policy when we're being, you know, we're having such obfuscation from public health officials within the agencies, from intelligence officials as well. Because a lot of this is just about setting definitions and risk-benefit parameters. And so if the people who, you know, the people with the technical expertise are trying to frustrate the policy, that makes it more
and
difficult.
And even if it is morbid curiosity, I mean, we have, you know, our historians and academics analyze and write and discuss and teach about what factors contributed to World War One, World War II, like major Napoleon's rise, things we talked about last week, like the shape of global events and how the, and what led to them are not just like curiosity. They're part of expanding the palette of human understanding.
Yeah,
and this is a very significant thing that happened
to
the world.
Very significant event, yeah.
It's the, one of, like, the most significant thing that has happened in our lifetime. Millions of people died.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't, how dare anyone say, oh, wow, you're really obsessed with figuring out how it happened. I am obsessed. It matters.
Yeah.
And even if it doesn't matter, it matters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's, so people who just like dismiss this as like, well, who cares? You know, it's so irritating. This is a crucial public policy question. It's a crucial historical question.
Right.
The one thing I do worry a little bit about, particularly because, you know, in the lead up to this hearing, Rand Paul was, you know, he's given it a lot of kind of theatrical billing. It's like the COVID cover up. Here it comes. Secret
That's
whistleblower.
Marketing. He's got to
do
it that
you know,
way.
I understand that. I understand that. I'm not criticizing him too much, but that's what you do to get attention to this stuff. But I do worry this is going to – the lab leak stuff is maybe becoming like a little bit like –
Boy Who Cried Wolf.
No. Well, more like Russiagate for the right, you know?
Oh, that we're going to – Mueller
here it comes. Here it comes. The walls are closing in on Fauci, X, Y, and Z. And people get then separated from the very important public policy question of like we should stop doing this kind of research to – stop, prevent the next pandemic from being created.
Well, Biden gave him such a level of protection
from with this pardon. Yeah, sure.
Very bad.
Yeah.
Very bad. Right. Yeah. Because at some point it becomes, and I'm an Occam's razor guy. Like I reject a lot of what are called conspiracy theories about aliens or Havana syndrome or Epstein stuff. In this one, it truly does look like the Occam's razor to me is that Fauci initially grasped that there was some likelihood this was a result of research that we had funded and that he is the foremost public advocate of conducting.
Yes.
And he tried to steer them in a very heavy-handed way toward alternative explanations to save his own skin and to protect the research that he idiosyncratically thinks must be done at all costs. Like, that is the Occam's razor explanation here.
Yes, yeah. He is the minority who thinks that this research is great and we should be doing a lot of it, right? The most risky type of it. Like, this is another thing that's been frustrating about this discussion is we've now gotten into these, like, meta questions about what counts as gain of function research. And then there are some reasonable questions of like, how do you define this research so as not to restrict useful things while cracking down on the risky stuff. But that's all beside the point. It's immaterial for Fauci himself, who is a active proponent of the most risky forms of this research.
And supported it being done in China.
Yes.
Let's do it in Greenland.
Yeah.
Let's do it in a, you know
Let's
what I mean?
Let's not do it at all. Let's not do it at all.
But if we're going to do it, if there is some important legitimate, it just has to be done under much safer conditions, not where people come and go, oh, hey, honey, I'm going to the lab today where we experiment on viruses.
I'll see you at the wet market later.
Mm-hmm.
See? There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I think
that is the best explanation of how it could possibly be. Is it was a joke at RFK Jr.'s expense that I saw on Twitter once, this is fake. It's a joke, but it says if RFK Jr. had said, "Well, I was visiting the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and I saw this containment of biohazard, and I'm like, these are perfectly good bat parts, so I brought them to the wet market to be sold." That would actually perfectly explain the situation.
That would be hilarious. Yeah, that's good.
Well, speaking of viruses, though, let's go straight from that into some things I wanted to say about this hantavirus.
Okay.
I am very, very alarmed. My state of alarm is high.
Yeah.
I think we're doing this entirely wrong. Do I think there's a great risk this becomes a pandemic? No, I think there's a very low risk. But I think the risk could be much lower if the officials took stronger precautions for the small number of people who were exposed on this cruise. Like, there's no forcible... I mean, I don't love the idea of forced quarantines, but we're talking about 18 people. And they're being asked to stay at this medical center... But and there was one American who was she's been on this world travel tour. What are we doing here?
Yeah,
stay in the medical center until it's done.
Okay. Yeah. So a couple things I would say is, like, firstly, I'm not nearly as alarmed as you are. I still value freedom.
Yeah.
I will say a quarantine of people who have been exposed to an outbreak, right?
To a highly lethal pathogen.
Is, and you have individualized information and suspicion about them that they might be infectious themselves. That is very different from a society-wide lockdown, which would never be appropriate.
Right.
And then also the fact that this virus is not transmissible means that these tools of quarantining and contact tracing can actually work. I mean, this is why none of that stuff worked with COVID, and also why lockdowns didn't work with COVID either, is because it's so transmissible.
It's too transmissible.
Yeah, that it's always going to be circulating in the society. So maybe you can reduce the rates of transmission, but if you then open up society at all, then the virus is just going to come back, right? There was no 2 weeks to stop the spread. That was never going to work, right?
And it wasn't sold to us as a, this will eradicate COVID. It was sold to us as a, need to prepare our hospitals to receive an onslaught of patients.
Yeah.
That's how the 2 weeks was sold to us. And then they just totally, and then they lied.
And they're like, oh, we'll just keep this going.
We'll keep it going as long as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then, and at the very point we let it, when eventually the public will to do this, as it eventually even did in China, lets up, then we will get hit with a wave of infections because it is not stoppable. You can't stop this train.
Right.
This train could be stopped.
Yeah, very easily. But because it's so easy to stop, I think that should mitigate against a lot of the alarm that you're expressing. And also, secondly, this is what I find so interesting about people are freaking out about the human-to-human transmission of hantavirus. But honestly, when it comes to, like, the ability of a plague to spread that's very deadly in humans, the normal way that people get hantavirus, which is very rare, but it does happen in the United States, is through, you know, rodent droppings that get aerosolized and you breathe them into your lungs, right?
But
people can be exposed to hantavirus that way easily in the United States today, right?
Sure.
That seems much scarier because you don't have to have a human who's going to die from the virus then go and infect other people. It's just the animals that are immune to the virus spreading it amongst people, you know, animal to person, right? This is why Black Plague was so deadly, right? Because it didn't spread human to human. It spread from rats that were immune to it, right? So that seems much more concerning to me. And so that's why, and this is less, it's, you know, we've had other similar outbreaks like Ebola or bird flu, things like that, where, you know, those were deadlier and more transmissible than hantavirus. And there was much less alarm about it then. Even though there was some alarm and justified.
Gone through COVID, so we're all more
knowledgeable. Everyone's jumpy.
We're just more knowledgeable, frankly, about how disease spreads and what can be done. I mean, Alina Chan was raised, I've been following her Twitter feed very closely.
She's great. She's great. Everyone listening to this should follow her on this.
And her, again, panic is never the correct response to any situation ever by definition. So I'm not calling for panic, and neither is she. But she's saying she has some fear that people... from the cruise ship, might have been infected, just kind of, minding their symptoms at home. Well, what if their waste products infect the rat population? you could do human to rat transmission and then rat transmission to everyone. And also there's some, it's not really confirmed at this point, but people, I think there was an Italian person on one of the flights from one of the people coming back who is presumed to have it, and it was just very casual contact with the person who would have been infected. I'm a little alarmed by these reports are not confirmed yet. So again, I'm not calling for panic. And even if it was bad, we wouldn't call for panic because panic's wrong.
Panic's bad.
But
I'm not panicking. Are you panicking?
some perhaps weak, but evidence of a very casual spread between very casual contact, which would be alarming. But maybe this person doesn't have that. Maybe it's something
know. And again, like quarantining people who are infected with a deadly virus and contact tracing for something like this is they're not illegitimate tools, right? And they've been long accepted public health tools.
Also, we know the patient zero.
Yeah.
And we know that it's not the case that like there's somebody on the cruise ship who got it from someone who got it from someone who got it from someone. The patient zero was a bird watcher who went where there's lots of rodent feces to watch birds and got it. And I
Big
believe
mistake.
Died
yeah.
and that's was on the cruise. That's like why that's why you don't wade through rodent feces to look for. We should be suspicious of bird watchers as a category.
Yeah, they,
I might do a little bird watching now and then.
It's
if
always
I was called on. I like birds.
Yeah, they're fine. It's always bird watching though. It's always presented as a like the most innocuous hobby, right?
not anymore.
Yeah, you know
they want us dead.
You know that
you should go to a bird watcher and be like, "Why do you want me dead?"
This is the next like conspiracy.
Yes.
Yeah, you know the episode of The Sopranos where Adriana and Tony get into a car crash, and then her boyfriend is really mad, and he's yelling at her, and he's like, "What are you doing at 2 a.m? Fucking bird watching?"
Exactly.
Well, that could be.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think it'll be all right. I think people are just kind of jumpy because of our, you know, traumatic experience with COVID and then the massive Leviathan state that birthed. So
yeah, that's fine. I just know if it spreads more, they'll have the same people who are like, no, we couldn't force these 18 people who were passengers on the outbreak ship. We couldn't possibly force them to quarantine. We couldn't do that. But if it becomes more widespread, they'll have no problem saying, yeah, everyone has to be locked in their homes forever.
Right.
Like why not use the statism right now on a small number of people to prevent the broader statism? I mean, I don't actually think we'll lock down everyone again ever because
there's too much resistance.
It was not a popular thing to do.
Yeah. This was Jay Bhattacharya's kind of promise for coming to the NIH is like, we are going to produce information, you know, research looking into the ineffectiveness of lockdowns, and that will guide future pandemic responses, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah, it's just like, again, on the quarantine point, though, it's like before people start yelling at us that we're status, right? It's the equivalent of you can detain someone who you have probable cause thinks has committed a crime.
Sure.
It would be wrong to just blanketly detain everyone in the search for information about a particular crime, right? Quarantining is something similar.
Right. Yeah. I will use an umbrella when it's raining. I will not use an umbrella.
Darken the skies.
At all times as a prophylactic measure against a theoretical
That's
rain.
More like, that's like wearing your mask all the time, right? You just have your umbrella up all the time.
Right,
just
as
in
a
case.
Prophylactic measure, yes. Right, I've said, I for people, the one situation where I could envision wearing like a mask, if you're sick and you have to travel, then maybe you do. Maybe you should do that.
Mm-hmm.
People should just try to stay home more when they're sick. But that's a do as I say, not as I do thing, because I'm sick all the time. And
are you sick right now?
No, I'm feeling pretty good.
Okay.
I'm feeling pretty good. Well, finally nursed that hangover had from your big Tuesday.
Yeah.
We thought about going to another bar, and we talked ourselves out of it.
Yes.
And that
very smart.
Was a welcome
what a wise
development.
Decision.
And we were being goaded into it.
Yes.
By friends and interlopers.
I won't name names, but a certain producer of this podcast decided to.
Yeah, it was like, you bunch of pussies. Come this.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we made a wise decision.
We did.
And
look at us now. It was a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
You can't on a Tuesday.
Tuesday, Wednesday.
Thursday.
Oh,
yeah.
It's practically Friday.
Yes. Yes.
Do we want to talk about the event a little
bit? Yeah, you did great.
Okay, thank you.
You debated Mark Moran.
Yes, independent Senate candidate in Virginia.
Former reality star.
Yes, former reality star from Fuckboy
Island.
Which I was busting his balls a little bit about on stage. But nice guy, fun event.
Not a show where you fuck boys, though. It's a show about a kind of man.
Right, you were complaining.
Shut up. It's a kind of man that women find...
Right.
Alluring and yeah. offensive. And,
yeah, at the same time.
Like
right.
douchebag.
Yeah.
It's the same.
And I guess I haven't watched the show really, but I guess that's the reality game is like determining who's the fuckboy and who's the nice guy, I guess.
I don't know. Did Stormy Daniels host it or something?
Did she?
I have no idea. That might have been the gay version. Anyway, he was against data centers, kind of.
He wants a tax on them.
Although he was smart enough to know that you can't be against them entirely.
Yeah.
Because we do have to have them, and they
provide a lot of
value.
Yeah, he wants to tax them, but then also declare them critical national infrastructure.
Well, you calmly debunked a lot of wasn't even really making these talking points, but you debunked a lot of the bad arguments against them being made about water and energy.
Yes. The water concerns are completely fake. Like, data centers don't use that much water.
Right. Golf courses use lots of water.
Yeah, in the aggregate, right, yeah.
And if we were running out of water, we need data centers, not golf courses.
Right, yeah,
I mean, that's not a choice we have to make. But
stop growing almonds in the middle of nowhere in California, right, in the
that desert. Would not be, yeah. We got to have them.
Right. So the water concerns are completely fake. The power concerns are a little more reasonable in that data centers use huge amounts of power. Mm-hmm. And so you can understand why people would think, oh, that's going to raise the power bills. And there's some evidence that it has put upward pressure on power bills. But at the same time, you know, most of the costs for electrical utility is just the fixed costs of the infrastructure. And so if you do have capacity and a data center sets up, that lowers rates for people because then you're spreading the cost of that infrastructure across more users paying more money. Because the data center is paying more money into the utility, and because they're regulated entities, they then have to drop the rates for average consumers. So there's some evidence data centers reduce energy costs, right? And then also because you're bringing in hugely profitable enterprises that consume power, they pay for utility upgrades and grid expansion and all this other kind of stuff that also puts downward pressure on prices. So,
but you didn't consider, you know, what if I'm against them? I just don't like them.
Yeah,
you fail to,
that's
you know,
true.
Where the data center touched me on the doll.
Right.
It's making me see ghosts.
Yeah.
So
it hums.
It's a malignant presence.
Yeah.
And you have no answer for that.
I do. It's just an answer that people don't find very compelling. I guess that's my fault as a communicator. But my answer is, you know, I get it. If you own a house out in Loudoun County and you live next to a big open field and then someone comes and builds a data center there, you like looking at the open field instead. But if that's
not
the case,
me.
Then
there's
just
a big,
buy the land.
There's
right?
a big open field in a Navy Yard where youths gather. I would much rather it was a
data center. It should be a data center.
I would replace that thing with a data center. Absolutely. Well, and then you also brought up something I hadn't considered. So people don't like them because they're ugly.
Yeah.
We should make them pretty. They should look like castles.
Yeah.
Would it be possible? Can you put like a park on top of the data center or like a track and field or something for people to use the space? I don't know.
Probably not, because they have to have big fans at the top to release heat, right? And so you would have to put the park on top of the fans. I don't know if that would work. And so this would be a great way to get data centers to use a bunch of water, is if you put a big park on top of them.
We got
to
make them look nice so people want them. Look like...
we're building
make them look like a step pyramid.
No, this is a fake problem, because data centers, they're huge, right?
Yeah.
And so they need a lot of land. And therefore you build them in the middle of nowhere because land is cheap, right?
Yeah.
And so what are we going to do? You're drawing a...
What if it looks like a monument?
A ziggurat.
Yes,
yeah,
to
a
the
Babylonian
gods.
Ziggurat. Yeah. Oh, that's...
And it's got like hanging garden type thing.
Show that to the camera. Show that to the people. Yeah.
It's nice.
It's beautiful. It's nice. Well, hang that on the refrigerator.
A little bit of my D&D art, which everybody compliments me on the maps I draw for our games.
Yeah.
How they would impress any kindergarten teacher in the whole country.
Yeah,
that's
pretty good
stuff.
Yeah, I remember when I wrote the cover story about the data centers. I mean, you know, if people want to try to make them look pretty, that's fine. But our editor asked me, it's like, you know, I said, you know, they're ugly, but what can you do? And he's like, you know, there's some efforts to make them aesthetically pleasing. Can you like try and find some examples of that? And I looked up the like list of top 10 like prettiest data centers. I'm like, these still all look like dog shit.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Fucking Walmart doesn't look pretty, right? Like
yeah.
strip malls don't look pretty. Lots of development doesn't look pretty.
Right.
But for whatever reason, this is the problem.
Well, and that's what when you say like with it, you know, Bernie Sanders wants a moratorium, just no new data centers. Yeah. Would you say that about grocery stores? We have enough grocery stores. People don't, you know, they're moving into neighborhoods. We don't want them. No more.
Mm-hmm.
No more ambulances. We've got too many ambulances zooming around. They annoy me. I hear the noise from them all the time. Your silly little, your concern. I mean, it is annoying when I hear them all the time in the middle of the night.
Ambulances.
But, yeah, we need them.
I got to stop prank calling the ambulances to your apartment.
I'd appreciate it. Yeah. You know, turnabout is fair play.
All the fraud charges you've got me hit with, I've sent a few ambulances over there.
Yeah, that's fine.
Those bills are racking up, though. So
they're going to come. Yeah. They're going to do a no-knock raid on your place in the middle of the night.
Uh-oh.
Just break down the door.
Uh-oh.
You're going to try to defend yourself and... bye bye.
Yeah, that's how they do it. Yeah, I guess maybe one point I can add on the data centers. You mentioned, is Bernie Sanders calling for a moratorium on grocery stores or whatever else? No, because people, you know, they understand what they get from the grocery center or the grocery store, right? And the point I made in the debate is like people just underappreciate what exactly data centers do for them, right? Right now, like if you're watching this show on your phone or listening to it on Spotify. All that data is stored somewhere in some data center that is then being transmitted to you. The reason that we don't have to ship you a DVD of this show is because a data center somewhere is doing the hard work.
I'd like to have a DVD. The true fans, they should have a DVD
the commentary
collection.
Track of us offering commentary. Okay, here's the part where I'm talking about things right here.
You know, that was a really interesting answer you just gave.
Yeah, we're like this ziggurat. We're just getting more and more meta with.
Let's get really meta.
Let's
analyze what we're analyzing.
Ooh.
Let's talk about. So we're going to talk about data centers, I think, for months and months to come. I think this is the new thing.
This is both what you hope for and also I kind of hate it, where you write about an issue. And then it starts to really blow up.
Yeah.
And so it's like...
you got lucky with this one.
Yeah, you're like, now I'm the person who has to talk about it, right? I just did a radio interview about it earlier today.
I did a debate with Batya Ungar-Sargon last week where I just used all your arguments. And I thought I did pretty well.
Okay, very good. That's not what I heard, but...
you're really putting me in my place today.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just busting your balls. I'm sorry.
I bully you.
That's right.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Hey, I'm working on the eating disorder.
Okay.
Know? Yeah. But
making it more serious, I hope.
Right.
Yes.
But I mean, this is both what you hope for as a magazine writer is you write about an issue and then it becomes a thing and then you have this background knowledge and you can comment on it intelligibly, right? Or intelligently. The problem is I find the dispute so stupid that I'm tired of the issue already. Like the housing and zoning stuff that I write about, like that's my wheelhouse. That's what I really like to talk about. The data center stuff, it's just like, all the concerns are fake. And so you get tired.
Make sure you tell the good, hardworking, salt of the earth Americans that it's gaslight the shit out of it. You, this is all in your head. You've made this up. It's fake and gay.
Yeah.
I saw, Tucker.
Look here, you idiots. Yeah, that'll win them over. Yeah.
You afraid of your refrigerator, too? your refrigerator called. It's running. Terrifying. Scary. It's out to get. I mean, it kind of is that, basically. It's the opposition to this. Mm. But Kevin O'Leary and Tucker Carlson were arguing about them.
Oh, fun. Because he's got that massive data center project in Utah.
Right. Tucker was going after O'Leary about that. And O'Leary's like, well, the Planning Commission voted 3-0 to do it.
Yeah.
And Tucker was like, well, what if they hold a referendum? How about all the voters hold a referendum? I'm like,
why?
I think if every person gets individualized veto power over...
That's bad.
...whether I build... I don't think we're going to
That's why we have
anything.
A housing crisis, right? We generally are moving... Like, in the housing context, we're generally moving away from the idea that, like, the community should get a say... You don't get to live in a house anymore.
Yes.
But now we're adopting it with data centers. Yeah, the one thing that maybe you could make the libertarian argument against data centers for, like the Utah project is a good example. It's going to be like some sort of military facility or DOD facility, right? So like maybe that's concerning. Mm. Big giant, you know, NSA data centers.
Well, if they're getting, they're always saying they're getting tax breaks, which sometimes. Gets classified as a tax break can be sometimes a little misleading. It's the federal government leasing them the property and charging them below market something or other.
Yeah, and so
I guess
be,
they should not do that. That
could,
but
that, sometimes that could be inappropriate. Sure, but if they're also like, if the data center is then providing services to the federal government, like that's kind
right.
of its want, right? Yeah, so there can be some cronyism with some of these data center deals, right?
I recently learned, but, you know how we are always told that oil and gas and fossil fuels are getting tons of subsidies.
Yeah.
That's a major talking point for even not for far left, even like liberals.
You're gonna tell me it's bullshit.
It's complete bullshit.
Yeah, right. They just get like normal like capital.
Well, and the bulk of what is this comes from a statistic from the International Monetary Fund,
mm-hmm.
and they produced a study showing that it's actually an implicit subsidy.
Yeah.
What they mean is the hundreds of millions that they're getting is because if the IMF ran the world, they would impose punitive, regulatory, crushing burdens on them that would make everything so much more expensive.
Yeah.
So the subsidy is that they're not doing that.
Right,
that's
exactly.
That's what they mean by subsidy. Mm-hmm. And okay, that is complete bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, Mark in our debate, he was bringing this up too. He's like, Virginia gives $1.2 billion a year to data centers. It's like, no, they just are taxing them less than you want to, right? That's what the giving them the money means. And you know, sometimes, again, tax breaks, not all tax breaks are good.
Some of the things that they offered, like Amazon to move here with a fulfillment center or move to New York.
Yeah.
It was bad. There was bad stuff. Oh, that's me getting a call here. Mute that.
That was bad. But even when people are like, we're giving Amazon, you know, AOC would say that. So we're giving Amazon millions of dollars. It's like, no, you're just choosing not to tax them.
Right. You're just confiscating less of their money.
Right. Exactly. The Virginia case is actually a little different because they ended up setting up a headquarters in Virginia. And the Virginia deal actually did involve the government giving them lump sum payments for every job they created, which is ridiculous. So don't do that. But yeah, most of the time when people talk about the government is subsidizing them with a tax deal, you're just giving them a special tax break.
Right.
And again, you should treat everyone equally and just lower taxes generally, but it's not like money from the public fisc is going to this enterprise. It's you are just taking less money from them.
Sorry,
busy
I gotta tell these people booking me for other things. Okay.
I'm sorry. Freed up is
I'm busy. I'm a busy man.
How do you handle the
it's
the
real
popularity?
Hard keeping it's... everything straight. Oh well, not the popularity, just the scheduling. I am a reasonably organized person,
mm-hmm.
but I am certainly not a like Catherine Mangy Ward style. I can't believe how she keeps all the things straight and like gets her kids to their schools and things. I'm also not completely disorganized. It's not like I can never show up for something in time. I'm in between.
Okay, freed up is an exception where you can't.
Well, I didn't say I'm on time for things, but I know I'm late. I know I'm
late.
That's
true. That's true.
You have just forgotten you've had to do this a couple times.
That's the difference. Yeah, fair enough.
I'm aware I have to do it and I'm late.
No, that's worse.
Okay.
That's a sin of omission, right?
Okay.
You're making a sin of commission. You know, you are actively being late when you know you have to be somewhere. I'm just chilling, you know.
I disagree, but it is hard. For instance, today I filmed Rising. We're filming Freed Up. I'm doing a hit for News Nation. I'm doing my show for Two Way, and at some point I have to write a newsletter. That's going to end up happening tomorrow.
On and on.
So it can be woe is me.
That's tough.
But
tough business.
You know, then you have the flexibility. Like we're not going to tape this tomorrow, and tomorrow I don't have that much to do. I have flexibility. I'll take my car in to get fixed.
Real coal mine we work on, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not complaining our job's too hard. But sometimes it's a lot to keep straight.
Stuff.
And making so – and I got to remember, what did we talk about on what show and what haven't I said yet? And I don't want to get it to be too repetitive for people who are Robbie completionists who are listening to literally everything.
We got some of them.
They're
always making some deep cut Robbie references that even I didn't know.
Yeah,
so.
That's the true fans.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to talk about, what else did I want to talk about? Oh, you put some weird stuff on here this week. What is in the miso soup?
Oh, man. Okay, so our producer, Cody, has turned me on to this author.
Well, I bet it's real sick shit then.
It is probably the most horrifying novel I've ever read. So the premise is this guy is a like tour guide for basically Americans coming to Tokyo's like a sex economy underground, right? and this American shows up. He's the tour guide, and there's just something really off about him. And then there was also a grisly murder that happened. Mm. Yeah. But there's, and so it's like, you know, the suspicion starts to shift to this this American tourist. Mm. But the libertarian point I wanted to make about it is, I don't want to give too much away because it's a great novel. Would really recommend everyone read it if you like sick and horrifying, disgusting things. Oh, with that disclaimer, don't read it out loud to your kids. No, there's kind of the libertarian point I wanted to make about it is there's a kind of like an occupational licensing subcurrent because he witnesses a horrific crime, but then he realizes, oh, if I go to the police, they're going to realize I'm an unlicensed tour guide and I'll have to stop working. And so really occupational licensing impedes justice.
That's a problem. Mm-hmm. I'm reading Dracula right now.
Bram Stoker's Dracula?
Yes.
Okay, how
is
it?
Never read it. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It is so great. This is going to sound like I'm insulting it, but I don't mean it. Like, it feels current.
Hmm.
Even though it was written, you know, 200 years ago,
yeah,
it feels like it could have been written now. Like it has the language of the world. I don't know. There's something about it that feels current and modern. Just because we have vampire stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
One thing I know, and I'm not even a quarter of the way through.
It's a huge book. Right?
It's a huge book.
How many pages is it?
I have no. I'm doing Audible, so I know how long things are.
Oh, because you're not reading it.
This is how I read everything. Yeah. I don't have time. I do it while I'm at the gym and I listen.
Sure.
And so then I get to comment on the voice cast performances, which are always really good.
Mm-hmm.
This one's really good. It starts with he meets Dracula right away, which took me by surprise because I always picture Dracula as the final villain or something. But and also because no one else lives in the castle, Dracula does a lot of mundane things like making his bed for him and preparing his meals. But it's almost more horrifying,
right?
This
yeah,
odd but almost sad and lonely and abandoned old aristocrat is very rapidly revealed to be a horrifying demonic force that plans to eat him.
Right,
and the main character is great and becomes aware of he's a rational actor and becomes aware that his fate is to be eaten and is trying to get out of it. And it's written in letters and diary entries and news articles. Mm. I just went through a fantastic sequence, which is just a news article about the ship that is carrying Dracula to England. And the ship, it's like the ship log written in a newspaper of what happened. And the ship already arrived. So the ship crashes onto the coast, and that's like witnessed from the perspective of the people who live there. And then later, it's log of the ship captain, which is just, you know, one person eaten after the other, him not understanding what's going on. Mm-hmm. And in the end, the verdict is that, well, probably the captain just killed everybody. But we know that Dracula was on that. But he doesn't know that. It's so great.
Yeah.
It's so great. The different, like, letters from different people, like people living their lives and having this evil force kind of in the background some of the time. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, that
I'm so in awe of it.
Okay, maybe I'll have to pick it up. Yeah, that's such a great way of building horror is to the miso soup.
The atmosphere. Oh,
the miso soup book does this too, where it's the villain, this guy. He's like both monstrous and menacing, but also kind of like childish and innocent. Right. Mm-hmm. There's just something kind of like. He has all these kind of like I don't mean to sound offensive, but like kind of like autistic type mannerisms, right? Where he's just like, oh, he's a little slow, right? And so it's that contrast between his, you know, monstrosity and then just a childlike quality to him as well, and it just makes it so much more creepy.
It's been making me think about. Vampires are all over fiction. Everybody loves vampires. So much vampire stuff.
They're more of a, I feel like vampires are more of a lady thing.
It's a lady thing.
Yeah. Am I wrong?
Oh, no, it's definitely a lady thing. Because of Twilight.
Yeah.
Because of the seduction.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch True Blood?
I watched. It was highly recommended to me. And I watched a few episodes. I'm like, this is not
good. It was only okay. And it got worse over time.
It was also kind of a, like, lib, like just like beat you over the head with its liberalism show. I remember in the very first episode, one of the characters is reading a Naomi Klein Shock Doctrine very ostentatiously.
It's trying. It does a great. you're supposed to, like, the show wants you to feel like, right, vampires are gay people, or mm-hmm. vampires are people who have AIDS or something. Yeah. And
it, yeah, when I say that, it's offensive.
Well, I'm just kidding. But also within the, they're very, like, there are some good vampires, but there are also a lot
there
of
are
evil
murderers,
vampires.
Yeah, sure.
And even the good vampires do a lot of evil things
right.
to people every right. now and then.
Right.
And so, like, if this was the real world, like the conflict is trying to have them be accepted in society, yeah. coming out of the coffin instead yeah. of coming out of the mm-hmm. closet. Like, in this case, I would be for, like, shutting them in the coffin.
Yeah.
Like, they are a danger to people. Very in an offensive and aggressive, they murder and eat people
yeah.
constantly.
Ben Dreyfuss makes this case with the X-Men, where it's like, you know, oh, the people are discriminating against the mutants. But it's like, well, a lot of the mutants are fucking dangerous,
yeah.
you know, and they do bad things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always funny when fiction, they try to, you know, they create a discriminated against class to represent, you know, some sort
right.
of discrimination in modern society, but then also make that class dangerous.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the X-Men is certainly more complicated than the vampires in True Blood because
yeah.
they've been mistreated. So, you know, Magneto is a great character because of his origin story, his mistreatment he was in the Holocaust
mm-hmm.
and how that has shaped his worldview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a smarter work than
yes.
True Blood. Yeah,
True
I think
Blood
we'd all
is
agree.
Not a smart work
right.
at all.
Yeah, that show, it also has this thing that I find so grating when they just had the characters
everyone
will just be
bisexual.
Given. Well, sure, but
yeah.
That's just life now,
yeah.
I guess.
It's life on TV. It's not life in real life.
The characters are given these like liberal monologues to just like say into the camera,
mm-hmm.
and it's supposed to always be this like devastating put down.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm supposed to get as the viewer, and they all are just like so self-righteous and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that so grating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where it's just like the character just becomes a vehicle for someone to give me, you know, the writer to give me their, you know, John Oliver monologue. I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't like that. Yeah, it was a real problem with I watched the other day, I watched Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Oh,
have you seen that movie?
I haven't seen it. Love Frances McDormand and Sam Rockwell. And...
Yes, and who I really like Frances McDormand and Sam Rockwell. And I
yeah.
like this director. He's the same guy who did In Bruges,
yeah.
Seven Psychopaths. Those are
yeah.
really good movies. But this people tell – I had to turn it off. People tell me I need to go back and watch the whole thing because there's like a little more depth to the characters. But like the first 30 minutes is Frances McDormand dressed up as Rosie the Riveter going around like giving just like the most on-the-nose rants
yeah.
about, oh, the – you know, there's like a – The premise of the movie is her daughter is raped and killed,
right.
horrific crime. And then she buys some billboards to police shame
aren't
the police.
Doing enough about
yeah.
it. Yeah.
She buys some billboards to shame the police into it. But then she goes around having all these rants where it's like, well, you know, why aren't the police investigating real crime instead of torturing black folk?
Oh.
And it's like, come on. And then there was another one where it's like the priest comes to visit her house to be like, hey, you're upsetting a lot of people in the community with these billboards. And she just goes off on some, you know, rant about, oh, you guys are all pedophiles, aren't you? And like, I'm supposed to find this compelling? Like, no.
She's
so I had to turn it off. But people say I have to
watch
the rest of it. It's one of those movies where it's like all the critics loved it. And I feel superior for rejecting a critically
Good.
Acclaimed movie.
Good.
Yeah.
She's great in everything. She's great in Fargo is so
Oh,
good.
I mean, yeah, she makes that movie almost.
Burn
yeah.
After Reading.
Excellent movie.
It's
so
great,
funny. So funny.
It's one of the funniest movies. And she's great in that. And she gets her way in the end.
She's
I
the
love,
only one that gets
I know,
anything out of it.
And it's
yeah.
just, it's inadvertent.
Yeah.
Because it's the path of least resistance
right.
for everyone else.
Yeah.
And it's great. And what she wants is so stupid.
Right.
It's
yeah.
so trivial,
yeah.
and they just give it to her.
People have described Burn After Reading as like a anti-spy movie,
yes.
where it's like no one acts with intelligence and there's no stakes
right.
to anything.
There were no
yeah.
stakes to anything.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the meta joke of
yes.
the entire movie is that like none, like there was
it's
no
so
espionage.
Good.
There was no plot or conspiracy.
It's a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
It's a comedy of errors type
yes.
thing.
And it's an absolutely hilarious movie. It's a very cynical movie in
yes.
that everyone is awful in it,
yes.
but it's very funny. If people haven't watched it, Coen Brothers movie, it's great. Yeah.
We talked a lot about The Odyssey last week, so we don't need to rehash all of that, although it man
no,
that,
we,
that controversy is building building and building. Did you see Troy? Because now it's just, yes, everyone's just doing comparisons to Troy.
Yeah, I did.
With Brad Pitt.
Yeah, I remember people not liking that movie, even though I thought it was okay.
I thought it was,
I saw it when I was good. In like eighth grade.
Sure.
And so my tastes were bad at the time.
I remember not liking that they had cut all, there are no gods in it.
Yeah.
It's just a straight war film of, I think, dubious historical accuracy.
Sure. Yeah.
But I remember really liking it and thinking the performances were pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that just because people love everything from 20, you know, everybody loves things from their adolescence.
Hmm.
So it's now, especially in comparison to this film, which again, no one has seen yet, everyone's being like, this is the greatest movie ever, which I think is an overstatement. But it was a good movie. And I think Brad Pitt was great in it. I think he gave a very memorable performance as Achilles, although I don't necessarily remember thinking that at the time. A lot of good performances. Eric Bana is great in it, actually, as Hector. Good fight between them.
Yeah. Brian Cox as Agamemnon.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Excellent. Yeah.
A lot of great performances. Orlando Bloom was really good as like Paris's craven, pathetic weaseliness.
Yeah, totally.
That's a good movie. But so now I'm just seeing my social media feed is just all Troy clips going. Like, remember when it was
when men were men.
When men were men instead of Elliot, because there was a rumor that Elliot Page is portraying Achilles. But I think that's not true. And also in the Odyssey, Achilles is a spirit. He's a revenant. He's he's dead and regretting his decision to go to war. So
so you think maybe it's like a detransitioner metaphor.
So it could be.
Wow.
A little bit more.
Well. Christopher Nolan always has, there's always a little something, you know, Christopher Nolan makes these decisions where it's like, if it's any other director, I would assume this is bad, just like really surface level mistake.
Yeah.
But there's maybe a little something else. It's like, Peter Suderman has made this argument about Oppenheimer. You know, the film revolves around whether he's being investigated for being a communist and whether he's a communist or not. But he makes the point, maybe that's actually about being a conservative in Hollywood.
Oh, how about that?
Maybe.
How about that?
Yeah, that's what these film analysts, they, you know, because there's the lines, and then there's that space in between the lines. But sometimes there's a little bit of information there, too.
That said, I did just see a screenshot from the film this morning with Odysseus washed up on the shore and Athena's going to be there. And it's so gray. And so misty. No.
Pazuzu got his eye.
And like, I understand that the shore in England looks like that, but the Mediterranean is a very beautiful place with, it's like very hot and very sunny. I was just in Sicily last summer. I've been to Capri. I've been to Italy numerous times. Yes, there is weather, and sometimes the weather is not nice, but not a single shot from this movie is there sun and color.
Yeah.
And it's not the Mediterranean. It's not the North Sea. Yeah. It's the Mediterranean.
Were there at least big, loud bassy sounds in the trailer?
Oh, yes.
Excellent.
Oh, yes.
Excellent. That's all I care about.
Subtitles on.
When you were when you were in Sicily, did you see the sea monster?
The whirlpool?
Yeah.
No, but I read Circe, the modern retelling of it.
Yeah.
It's really a book for women, but I liked it. And
interesting.
Shut fuck up. And I liked the revisionist gay version of Achilles in Patrocles too. Although, now conservatives want to be like that they weren't gay in real life. Like,
come on. Yeah.
Achilles wanted to be buried with Patrocles.
Yeah.
You know.
That could mean anything. That could mean anything. Yeah.
And then we're going to lay opposite sides. So I think we know what was going on there. But yes, I read it, and I was in Sicily, which is really supposed to be her island, because the pass where Scylla and Charybdis is the pass between Sicily and Italy. So
interesting.
It was perfect. No whirlpool. Didn't see the whirlpool.
Damn.
Can't wait to see Charybdis in this movie.
Hell yeah.
Better be horrifying. Just eating people. I'm repeating myself. We already talked about this.
Yes. Well, okay. Let me inject a little original material.
Okay.
Have you been following the controversy over the translation that Christopher Nolan used?
Just a little bit, yes.
This is
he's using the woke translation.
He's using the woke translation done by a woman. Yeah, I know, it's terrible.
Is
one of those things where it's like,
the time that this story takes place, women weren't allowed to write.
Wow, I didn't know that. this is one of those things where I understand why people can get invested in which translation is better for different works, but it's also just like, guys, relax, right? Come on.
Actually, I remember reading, I love Romance of the Three Kingdoms, where I talk about frequently the history of the Three Kingdoms period of China. And right, there's two different translations, or using Weejiles and Pinyin, and just different ways we translate the Chinese language. And one uses all those additional names, you know, how the in Chinese you have the names and then you have an additional name that uses, and like there's literally 10,000 characters in this. And like I already know the names from the video game. Now you're now, right. Zhuge Liang is also Kong Ming, and Cao Cao is also Meng De. And now I had to learn another set of names for 8,000 characters.
This is a nice thing about
that's it. A translation complaint.
This is a nice thing about English, right? Our names are our names. And it's pretty straightforward. You get one name, maybe two.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you have a third, that's crazy.
Yeah.
A similar thing with the Russian novels, right? This is always the complaint: is you have the four names and then the diminutives, and you know none of it's intuitive in English, and so you can just
Raskalska Nosvich,
right? Or Sasha, they're sometimes called. Yes. Yeah, yes. Totally. Tolstoy is much easier to read because he also
K and L.
Because he just spends forever giving his characters like small physical imperfections that he always references when they're talking. So like one of the characters in War and Peace, she has like a little, she's described as beautiful, but with a little mustache. And so even though you forget her name, you always know she's the mustache lady. So.
In Three Kingdoms, some of the characters have are described as having just sensational, someone's blue haired and someone's purple haired, and like there's no, and someone has like a 10 inch tongue, which is to signal that they're really, you know, persuasive or something, but also popular with the ladies.
My parents listen to the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the next thing I was going to ask you about was porn in prison, but maybe we should skip over that.
That was the scandal.
That was what Rufo was saying in California.
In California prisons, they gave the prisoners iPads.
And they used it to watch porn.
Yeah.
We should stop giving people iPads just for free, I think, in schools. Actually, I'd rather give them to them in prison than in school.
Yeah.
Because prison's awful.
Yeah.
I mean, these are like people on death row. They're pretty bad. But I don't think prison should be torture. Maybe now I'm being the lib.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with you. Torture. Yeah, I mean, American prisons are death traps.
I don't care if
they
watch porn, honestly. Yeah.
It's not...
If they're beating off, maybe they're not beating each other.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's a reduction in cost of the taxpayer.
Reduction in rape, perhaps.
Yeah. Oh, maybe.
There's that, too.
Yeah.
That happens.
Yeah, I don't know. Of all the scandals about California government, this one...
I was a little underwhelmed.
Yeah.
Rufo was really going on and on about it.
I mean, it is like a conservative Mad Lib. You got like death row inmates given porn by Gavin Newsom.
Yeah.
But what else we got on the list?
What else we got? Let's talk about a little bit more movies, then we'll talk about something real again.
Okay.
The Good Shepherd, which you brought up.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic movie. Mm-hmm. That movie is so good. Mm-hmm. Doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah.
It is a really amazing movie about the founding of the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Fictionalized, but ties into Bay of Pigs and just amazing performance from Matt Damon, who's going to be Odysseus, as just as a type of person, as a wasp.
Yes.
And there's so little...
The company man, yeah.
The company man, there's so little substance to him that it's almost more real.
Yeah.
Because he could be, his name's like Joe Wilson or something.
Yeah.
He's not a real person. He's a composite character.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just, there's nothing to him. He's an empty person.
Right. And what is the peak of the film is the Joe Pesci monologue where he's talking about the various immigrant groups in America, the white ethnics and everyone else.
Right. He's an Italian, but he came here when he was two. He's Sicilian. What do you people have?
Right. You know, we have the church, the Irish have the homeland.
Gratuitous use of the N-word.
But they have music.
Yes.
The Jews have their tradition. What do you have? And he's just like
United States of America. The rest of you are just visiting. Now, some people have taken that.
Oh, as a good thing.
Like their mantra.
Yeah.
In the heritage versus creed Americans debate.
Yeah. Well, that's a remarkable misreading of the film. This hollow man with no heart.
Right. And it belongs to him because his ancestors came over on the Mayflower, and Joe Pesci's ancestors brought him in a basket when he was two. But again, today we recognize those as both white people.
Yeah.
So
right.
It goes to show that. You know,
it's a little silly.
It's
a little
silly,
but yeah. I mean, that's the entire, how does the film end? He's reading the letter from his father who killed himself because he was a traitor.
Yes.
And he's like, whatever you do with your life, like, I just hope you have like a rich, full life. Yes. He doesn't, because he's sacrificed all his relationships for what exactly? It's not clear. Yeah.
For this house of cards that he's building. Mm-hmm. There's so much density to the film. There's the cat and mouse game he's playing with his Russian counterpart. There's how his son becomes involved with a spy and that sordid end. His own affairs. His the subplot with the suspecting the defector is a spy. There's a great when he figures out the defector is lying to him and he has him play the his violin. Beautiful violin.
Yeah, I just wanted to hear something that was true.
Oh my God, it's such a great line. It's so good.
Man, I really have to go back and watch this.
That's a great movie. It shows that his involvement in World War II mm-hmm. with the British, and then they're mm-hmm. working with the Russians, mm-hmm. and then they become suspicious, and mm-hmm. and his British friend is a Russian spy. Oh,
right.
Great movie.
Excellent.
Great movie.
Yeah, and it's a reminder of like how, I feel like we forget this. The deep state was the country club guys, yes. right? It was everyone yes. who went to Harvard and Yale deciding that they're going to set up a spy ring.
Yes. Yeah. And nobody's hands are clean.
Mm-mm. No. Good except one. for us Catholics who were excluded from the agency. Right, right. We didn't do anything wrong.
Right, no, of course not. Us Italian Catholics in particular. We would never be involved in crime or violence or any kind of social disorder.
What are you talking about?
At all. What are you? I'm walking here. Hey, you got a wise guy. what's some policy we can circle back to here? What else is going on? I wanted to talk about the Thomas Massey thing.
Oh,
okay.
Gotta
talk about
yes,
that.
Okay.
Because this is outrageous. So I don't know if I hesitate, frankly, to even bring it up because they don't want to add any credence to it. Mm-hmm. It should lack all credence. Thomas Massey's running for re-election right mm-hmm. now. He's being primaried by pro-Trump people because he stood up for principle and has criticized and voted against Trump on the Big Beautiful Bill on tariffs for the Epstein disclosure.
Yeah.
I agree with Thomas Massey on the overwhelming majority of things, by far my favorite member of Congress.
Yep.
I completely disagree with him, increasingly so, on everything he's had to do with the Epstein stuff.
Sure.
But that is not enough for me to think that he should not be in Congress anymore. I just disagree with him on that.
We want him there. We want him there. For libertarians, sure. This is the best we got.
Absolutely. So they're throwing everything they can at him. Mm-hmm. And there is this, it's hard to even describe because there is nothing to this accusation.
Yeah, catch me up, actually, because I saw
it's frankly hard to even describe. Yeah. This week, a bunch of anti-Massey, pro-neocon, pro-interventionist, pro-State of Israel influencer type people surfaced some accusation by some woman that she was paid a $5,000 hush money payment by Massey. Uh-huh. But there's no underlying, it seems like that. So he lost his wife very tragically. Mm-hmm. She died suddenly and unexpectedly. He was a wreck because of it. It was very sad. He has subsequently met someone and gotten remarried. Good mm-hmm. for him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
In
between that, he met this woman. It's not even clear if they were. They were maybe friends or romance. She works for a different congressman. Congresswoman, and had some kind of workplace dispute there, and her contract wasn't renewed, and she's having some kind of legal action against that. It doesn't involve Massey at all, but Massey may have given her a small sum of money that helped with her moving costs uh-huh. or to help with her legal yeah. defense. The idea that it's hush money, what is it hushing up?
Yeah.
There was nothing, this was yeah. a... He's not being alleged that there was any wrongdoing in terms of yeah. this relationship.
Yeah.
This relationship did not overlap
yeah.
with his relationship, so there's nothing... Yeah. There's no underlying
scandal.
You did something wrong. Mm-hmm. So it is merely to create headlines, Massey involved in payment scandal with woman, yeah. even though each one of those details, there's nothing wrong with it on its own.
This is some dirty politics.
It is disgusting.
Yeah.
It is such a vile smear.
Mm-hmm.
This man, mm-hmm. one of the most honest men in Congress, and frankly, one of the most vocal in the defense of women, maybe we would say that this is why you take some accusations with a grain of salt. Mm. But she's not even really accusing him of anything.
Right.
It's just third parties.
It's a media engineered smear.
It is completely engineered, and it's not even engineered by media because nobody's covering it. It's
a smear engineered in the media
by social media activists.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
By Will Chamberlain, you know that guy.
Oh, sure.
And people of that, and like Josh Hammer, again, people who want, who are against Massey because he doesn't want your tax dollars sent
to Israel.
To Israel. Yeah. That is literally all it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty awful stuff.
Pretty sick stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe,
fuck them.
Yeah. Maybe he can take some solace in the fact that, you know, you're only catching flack if you're over the target, right?
Yes.
So,
So his primary's coming up. He may, I don't know, he may lose. It seems close-ish.
He's beat off mega challengers before.
This is a more serious challenge. Mm. They're really throwing, I mean, it goes to show, they're trying to throw everything at him.
Yeah.
The last time AIPAC just kind of ran some negative ads or some campaign, some ads in his opponent, I have no idea what it was. It was a half-hearted effort. This is a real effort, and Trump's really behind it.
Yeah. Who will be left of, like, the old school, like, libertarian Republicans?
Just Rand Paul.
Yeah. Just Rand Paul. Damn.
The Tea Party crushed by the deep state.
Yeah.
It's really disgusting.
Sure.
Really disgusting to see. Yeah. So I hope that I certainly hope he's reelected, and I hope that there's some I don't know. Debunking I don't know. Maybe I should write something. Maybe I'll write something.
Why don't you do that? Why don't
I'm
you
outraged.
Do that?
Yeah, I'm outraged.
Okay.
This false Me Tooing never stops.
Yeah.
Never stops.
I don't live in his district, but I would stop my normal non-voting behavior to vote for him.
Yeah.
Are you going to vote for
me? We're a 501c3.
Yeah, we're not endorsing nobody. I'm just describing my own
behavior.
Yeah.
You would place a pen on a piece of paper that it's a ballot and put the... Yeah.
And I'd color in the little box.
No, I vote. I'm not a non-voter.
Okay, you're going to vote in the mayoral election? I don't know if there's still time for you to register for the primary.
I'm registered to vote.
Yeah,
oh,
but you're not. You'd
primary.
Have to be
primary.
Although no, they changed it, right? You don't have to be a Democrat to vote in the primary.
I'm registered as a Libertarian.
Okay.
Which gives us nothing.
the big election here for folks who don't live in D.C. is we have a mayoral primary, and there's the for D.C. moderate establishment character, Kenyon McDuffie, and then there's the socialist Louis George, Janice Louis George. So that's the big election.
McDuffie's
right now.
The non-socialist.
Yeah, but he's from what I hear, he's not doing so well because people in the city are mad about Trump and all the Trump stuff he's doing to DC specifically, and they are mad at Bowser for not fighting him enough, even though I think she was quite prudently trying to work with the administration that has a huge amount of leverage over
massive
the city
power,
of DC.
Yes.
So yeah, she gets it's a thankless job to try to like manage up a Republican administration that loves to dump on the city. But now people are mad about it and they're going to elect a socialist who's going to make everything worse, even though she is actually pretty good on the zoning stuff. But
the socialist?
Yeah. But, you know, what good does good zoning do for you if you tax all the businesses out of town, right?
That's so not good.
Yeah.
Taxes, man.
Taxes.
We don't like them.
I don't like them.
I would vote. I agree with the cat with Catherine and the Libertarian that it's pointless,
but you want it's,
it
as a consumption
good. Makes me
feel
good.
You want to express yourself. Yeah, sure.
I do lots of things that are useless.
Yeah, sure.
But
most things.
It's all useless. There's no point. It's all a great lie.
But it's so long as we vote for that lie.
As long as we vote for that lie.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, speaking of accusations, can we talk about, I put it on the list, capturing the Freedmans?
Sure. What's that?
Yes. So after I turned off three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri, my friend recommended I watch this documentary.
You didn't want to hear about police racism. You're like, I back the boys in blue.
That's right. Yeah. Thin blue line.
Yeah.
You know, order, chaos.
Yeah.
I know what side I'm on.
Yeah.
No,
I'm gonna do what it takes.
The Punisher,
like pure Punisher. Yes,
yeah. Joe Lancaster, our colleague, he wrote a good story about how the Punisher went from being this like, you know, psycho vigilante to the police.
Right.
You know, like mascot.
Yeah.
It's interesting, but So it's a documentary. It's called "Capturing the Freedmans," and it is about a family where the father and their three brothers, the father and one of the sons is accused of some pretty heinous child abuse, right? Sexual abuse. And what's fascinating about the documentary is one of the other sons, while these accusations are playing out and they're being charged in the Long Island community where they live, he's making all these home videos of the family trying to grapple with the accusations and like falling apart over it. And so that aspect of it is fascinating. It's extra fascinating because the son who filmed all this stuff went on to become like a birthday clown. And so there's just like this weird surrealist element to the whole thing as well, or absurdist.
This is one of the weirder things you've ever told me about.
It's so strange.
Were they guilty? Did they do it?
Well, so this is what I found very interesting about the documentary is it sets it up as the father gets caught with getting child pornography in the mail, right? So he is a pedophile, right? Like there's no dispute there. But then there's...
Was it the government that sent it to him and then arrested him after he opened it? Ha-ha.
Yes.
Of course.
Although he had like...
All right.
We won't get into that part of it. But then, so they arrest him for child pornography. And then they, during like the first raid on his house, they discover that he's teaching a computer class for children in his home as well. And so the documentary then leads you down this path where it's like, the cops then go around to all the students and are like, this is like in the middle of like sex abuse, you know, child sex abuse panic of like the 80s and 90s and doing the thing you're not supposed to do where it's like, and so he did this to you then, right? And then he did this and this, right? And so the documentary kind of leaves you with the impression that this guy was a pedophile and he did admit to some child abuse, but then was kind of railroaded with all these additional accusations. And then the son was very much railroaded. But then, so I watch all of this, and I'm like, wow, fuck the police. This is a real
case of
injustice. You're
gonna put on three billboards back on.
Right, exactly.
Fire it up.
And the one son, the dad killed himself in prison. The son has now been released, and he's pursued vigorously in an attempt to clear his name. But then so the documentary is very compelling. It's an excellent documentary. Then you go and you like read some of the background material and some of the stuff that's left out of the documentary, and you're like, wow, these guys are guilty as sin.
Yeah.
Like maybe the cops did in fact manufacture some accusations from some of the children. Sure, I completely buy that. It is so their guilt is just so overwhelmingly obvious. Like, firstly, the documentary is so compelling that you kind of turn your brain off to like the very obvious pushback of like, okay, so this guy is a pedophile. He has admitted to abusing some children. Oh, but of course he didn't abuse these children.
Right.
Come on. And then the son, who the documentary very much leads you down gives you the impression that he was railroaded, even though there's a little bit of ambiguity. But the director has since become a major advocate for his clearing his name and his release. He confesses to his lawyer that he does this. And there's maybe some ambiguity about like maybe this is a legal strategy. He does a big interview with Geraldo Rivera after he's convicted, confessing to all the sexual abuse again. And that's not mentioned in the documentary at all. His long confession to Geraldo Rivera on camera. I'm forgetting all the precise details, but like so many other pieces of evidence that it's just
it's like making a murderer.
Yes, yes.
Like that guy, not the first time he was wrongly convicted, he said. Absolutely guilty the second time.
Yes.
Absolutely. I think the nephew was not guilty and was just mentally handicapped and they tricked him. But because there's no other suspect.
There's no
other suspect. It's a real bad sign.
Yeah. And that documentary also left out some like crucial pieces of evidence.
Yeah. That one kicked off the whole, ooh, documentaries can find out they're all innocent.
Well, I mean, this was an earlier version of this.
Amazing.
Yeah. No, the real origin from that form of documentary is an exceptional documentary and one where it actually did get an innocent
the
man
West
off.
Memphis?
No, not that one. Have you ever watched Thin Blue Line by Errol Morris?
No.
It's an excellent documentary about a man who was convicted of killing a police officer in Texas. And he's like, he's a famous documentarian and just like in his very characteristic style and through a series of interviews, he basically just shows how the police's case against this guy is complete horseshit, how the judge was so incredibly biased against him because they interview the judge and he's like weeping about his love for law enforcement. And it's like, what? How the witnesses against him are all lying very transparently. And then he basically gets this is the thing that he does that other true crime documentaries don't, and that's how you know they're bullshit, is he finds the guy who's much more likely to be the killer, interviews him, who's already in prison for other crimes, right?
Right.
And basically gets him to confess on camera. The problem is that documentary is excellent documentary. That's what really kicked off this genre of like true crime debunking a conviction. And almost always the person is just guilty.
They were innocent. I believe it in the, do you know the West Memphis 3?
Oh, yeah,
do you know
so,
that
yeah.
one? Those people were innocent.
Yeah,
I
Satanic
think.
Panic thing.
That
yeah.
was prime Satanic Panic. And there's a series of the Paradise Lost documentaries. Mm. And my recollection is the first one is not so in their defense mm-hmm. and is a more just a kind of in the vein of the panic.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the documentaries become more skeptical over time. Mm-hmm. And then by the end are just massively in favor of these people being released as most of the public mm-hmm. comes to because there's just so little evidence against them.
Mm-hmm.
So the case being mishandled so badly and it just being the Satanism not being a sufficient example to explain why this had happened. That one, and I loved that the Jinx documentary, which was a rare case of trying to convict someone.
Hmm.
Robert Durst.
Oh,
that guy.
Right, yeah.
But that one was also a little manipulative in trying to make, I mean, I have no doubt that he killed those three people,
mm-hmm.
like none whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But that what got all the headlines is they have him on tape saying, killed them all, of course, or whatever.
Yeah.
It was manufactured more so to arrive at that than you were aware of.
Yeah.
That's
why,
it's
you know,
good.
Documentaries can do great stuff. We produce documentaries here at Reason.
Yeah, but we don't lie to you.
No, we don't lie to you, firstly. And then secondly, you have to be very careful with documentaries because film is such a compelling medium that they can really leave you with particularly with a very complex criminal case where so much depends on what you put in and what you leave out. You can very much convince anyone that someone is guilty or someone is innocent.
You can also convince anyone to say anything if you interview them long enough.
Yeah.
This is the power the police have. And journalists have this power too if they're good at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've said this before, but confession feels good.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for the soul.
Mm-hmm.
You, when you're questioned, you want to tell the person what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
If they're any good at what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They just let you talk. The longer it goes on, the more likely you are. You also... You get tired. You get less precise in your language, what you say.
Mm-hmm.
This is why you never speak to the police, even if you're totally innocent.
Mm-hmm.
You could inadvertently say something accidentally that's untrue, or they could misremember what you say. There's so many different ways this could screw you up that you just shouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was the case with the Making a Murderer kid who didn't, Central Park people. All you know, they give.
Mm-hmm.
The police just talk to him. Yeah, you did this, right? Well, help us out here. We just want to know. And
I
then
just
you say
clear
something,
up a few things. Yeah.
And then you say something, and you don't even know what you said. I mean, it was someone who was working for a conservative media channel and was fired afterward.
Oh.
But was a documentary filmmaker, and they interviewed me for like
Tucker Carlson.
No, not Tucker. For like 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And about like political radicalism on like Antifa and their tactics and the campus protesters. And at the beginning, I'm being very precise in what I say because the documentary maker wants stronger condemnation. You know, it's so organized, all this violence we're seeing. And I'm saying like, well, it might be a little bit organized, but it's these are the, you know, I'm just being very careful and factual. But this goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. By the end, I'll say whatever they want me to say so that I can just be done with this interview because it's going on for, I'm sick of talking.
Yeah.
By the end, I'm like, yeah, they're all radicals. I probably Soros is paying for them. Are we done yet?
Mm.
That's the power.
Well, yeah,
that's the power of the interviewer.
Yeah.
So.
Sure. Yeah.
And then they can cut all the things I said that weren't, you know, they're going to use seconds of
They're
going to
use that clip, right, from the 6 hours that they filmed you.
Yep.
Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how it works.
This is why I think print is the more truthful medium, right? Because it's less... I mean, you still have the case if you take certain comments from people, but you can add more context, I think, better than in a documentary like that. And it's also just like, because you're just reading words on a page, it's less manipulative of your emotions, right?
Yes.
Obviously, writing can be very compelling, but...
Well, when you sit to write something, you have to actually defend what you're saying.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're just talking on television, it's not... I mean... You can edit and revise what you're writing.
Right,
I can't
edit
and revise what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure I've...
Actually, let's roll that again,
I mean, I can guarantee you that, and not intentionally, that I have said more... I have uttered in television commentary more things that are false or hard to defend than I've ever committed to print because
the things I read in print,
I read over and go, well, that's weak. I can't defend that. Or an editor says, but when you just talk, I mean, this is the shame about everybody preferring the 3-hour podcast format is that people are just giving you their unedited thoughts, but unedited thoughts can be wrong.
It's a little less rigorous. Yeah. Not here. We've researched everything we talk about to the T.
Yes.
Yes.
We come with facts.
How do you think you do in the box?
See how well the facts were prepared? See the ziggurat?
Yeah, that's good. Very good.
Yeah. Highly accurate. How would I do in the box?
Yeah, in the interrogation booth. If you they pulled you in for some sort of crime, you know, and they're like, hey, Robbie, you know, I know you're innocent. Help me. They don't believe that out there. You need to tell me. Here's what I need to know to get you out of here.
I would stare back and without blinking. I'd like to see an attorney.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can't. I'm putting the police force. I can't do this. Yeah.
They won't break me.
No, we...
They can beat me. They can assault me. It can be sexual.
They can twist my nipples. I won't confess.
I won't break. I won't break.
That's funny.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You seen any good movies?
Why did I think of Catch 22 for some reason? I was thinking of Catch 22. That's another good book.
Oh, I didn't like it.
You didn't like that book?
No, there's much I did like about it, but
you're too annoyed by it?
Yes. I found cyclical, the same joke repeated over and over and over again to be grating and annoying.
Funny, and then it's not funny, and then it's very
funny.
Oh, then
it's funny again. Yeah.
okay, but that's how it works.
I understand. I guess I'm just not smart enough to get it.
I just love repeating myself. Yeah. So I saw a funny joke, a meme this week about your girlfriend or your wife telling, you know, repeating a story. You've already told me that. Versus you and your boys repeating every weekend stories you've told each other 1,000 times.
Oh, yeah.
There's some comfort to telling stories over and again. Also, I become old. I drink more. I forget things. So I might as well hear it again. I don't remember telling it to you, and I don't remember what you told me. So
yeah, this is how you keep the history alive.
Yeah.
You just keep repeating it. Yeah. What a joy it is to repeat a story you enjoy.
When I work on the delivery.
Yeah.
I build it. Also, that fish gets a little bigger in the subsequent tale of how I captured it.
Yeah. Soon enough, you're harpooning a whole giant squid.
Harpooning a giant squid.
You ever done that? Feels great.
Tell you about the time I harpooned a giant squid. I was gonna maybe. No, I was not gonna bring it up again. We're almost done with Mad Men, but we've had enough Mad Men on this podcast. We got two to go.
Yeah.
And my better half hates Don Draper and cannot even envision a outcome bad enough for him, which I knowing how it ends,
he's
going to
be upset. Yeah.
Well, it's ambiguous. At least it's not like a happy ending really for Don, but he wants Don dead. So
yeah,
that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But so we just watched the one. Okay. We'll talk about it a little bit where he just, cause it's so great. The episode's called Lost Horizon, third from the end. They're at McCann now. Mm-hmm. They're finally been subsumed. He's evolving into a company man, we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And he's just lost his apartment. He's lost his second wife. He is diminishing as a character. There's nothing of him, of substance. Mm-hmm. And he gets his new office and he presses on the window pane to feel that it's solid. Mm-hmm. And then he's in a meeting, ostensibly for his benefit to discuss light beer for men.
Yeah.
But he's one of 50 creative directors.
All eating that boxed lunch.
And the guy doing the presentation gives his exact presentation style. Think of a man.
Yeah.
Aging man, loved to play football when he's a kid. Yeah. Paint this picture. And how do we get him to drink light beer? And it's just, that's all you are.
Yeah.
That's all you are, Don.
In this machine.
There's nothing special about you. Mm-hmm. So he gets up, walks out, gets in his car and just drives away.
Yeah.
And that's the end of his story at McCann.
Right.
And it's just...
It's excellent.
It's like choosing to disappear.
We're
all tempted to do this every now and then, aren't we?
Just pick up and leave.
Just get up and go. Get in the car, hit the open road. He picks up a hitchhiker and the hitchhiker says, I'm going here, but is that out of your way? And he says, no. Nah. No problem.
What the fuck? It helps when you have millions of dollars, right?
Yeah, that does help. Let's just go.
The seventh season is a little uneven. I really like the stuff at McCann. There's some really interesting things going on there. Firstly, I love how, you know, their office, Sterling, like both office spaces in the earlier seasons, Sterling Cooper and then the second firm they start, are bright and airy, yes.
Open fun.
Floor plan, colorful. And then McCann is cavernous or a labyrinthine, yes. Right? It's just these small, dark hallways and offices, like they
with evil, rapey people.
Yes, they are just like ants in a hill,
yes.
Right over there. And then there's a really excellent scene too. It's almost terrifying where they're buying out the firm, right? They're bringing them over to McCann. And they have the main guy at McCann sitting across the table from them like an Old Testament god,
yes.
Right? Granting each of them their wishes.
Special favors.
He goes down.
Ortho Pharmaceuticals.
Yes.
Coca-Cola.
Your biggest dream.
Yes.
I am granting it to you.
Yes.
And he comes across as like
it's a false promise.
A god giving
yes.
presents, and then you realize he is actually a devil-like
yes,
character.
In exchange for your soul.
Yes. He is the devil. Yeah. And it's, I don't know, it's the ability to do stuff like that in a show about people working in an office.
Yes.
There's a level of genius and creativity there that is.
Joan tries to get out of being on an account with this awful guy, and then she gets an even more awful guy who she's clearly going to force her to sleep with him.
Yep.
And then she kind of rebuffs him, and then he sends her a note saying, pick a weekend. And she just, like, the walls are in her office are like getting smaller in every scene. It's just like what you said.
Excellent.
Trapped
so
in hell.
Yes.
Good
man.
One.
So well done. Okay, well, finish it and then start watching The Wire, because then that can be the prestige show that we talk too much about.
Okay,
because I just rewatched it and now I have all sorts of thoughts, but I can't share them with you.
I'm kind of watching The Boys. It's the final season of The Boys.
Yeah,
I watched any of that.
That's one of those shows where I've consumed some of the clips on YouTube.
It's liberal propaganda.
It seems kind of awful.
It's just anti-Trump.
Super nihilistic and
it's
gory.
It's so nihilistic and so gory. No, I'm stuck with it long enough. I gotta finish it.
Yeah.
It had an entertaining premise-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And Homelander is a pretty great character.
Mm-hmm.
But frankly, this season, they've just made him a Trump clone, and he's much less interesting.
Yeah.
And now it's like he's too crazy. Like, they tried to plumb the depths of his psyche with a bit more sophistication earlier on. There's a great episode. It's still unbelievably graphically violent, but there's a great earlier episode that shows like how they tried to condition him to need, because from an early age they discovered this is the Superman like guy who's even he exploded out of his mother's womb. He did laser eyes and killed all the doctors in the room. He has been an unstoppable force since he was a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've always known they cannot control him. Mm-hmm. He cannot be killed.
Mm-hmm.
So how, from an early age, they tried to condition him to need people's love and approval in order to keep him under control. And it's just failed horribly, but he never had like a real mother, and he was designed in a laboratory, and how that feeds into his whole thing and his God complex. And so he is interesting and the performance is really good, but now they've just kind of made him up. He's like Trump.
That's a shame.
And it's a shame.
Another unstoppable force. Patriots in control.
Big shame. Yeah.
The company
is just like so evil, and it's so cynical, and like
very on the nose too, right?
Then they tried to, you know what they did? This is a thing that annoys me. They introduced a AOC type character, pretty like liberal senator, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out she is secretly has the mutant superpowers, and she's been killing all these people, so she's evil.
Okay.
And she did all these evil things, and she's aligning herself with Homelander.
Yeah.
But then she's remorseful, and you want, because they keep waffling that, well, we wanted to like her because she's like a liberal character.
Yeah.
Okay, but she just like mass murdered a bunch of innocent people.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't form any kind of
like a liberal.
Right, she's just a bad. You're having sympathy because you're like, "Oh, but she's it's like woke. Like, "Oh, but she's a she's just girl bossing or something."
Mm-hmm.
Nah, she's got to go too.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
All right, well, I won't watch it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't bother
Finish
with it.
Finish it, start The Wire.
Don't bother with it. If you've gotten the meme content, you've gotten most of it.
Okay.
And The Wire, I should watch The Wire.
Highly recommend it.
Okay. Maybe that'll be next.
Okay.
All right. We'll leave it there.
Yeah. Another great episode.
See you next week.
Thanks for watching.